You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Colson. This is Minute 96. This minute begins with David asking, "With that being said, doesn't everyone want their parents dead?" And ends with the crew entering the cargo hold as Wayland asks, "What is this?" I can quote people without doing the voices, I swear. There are fascinating implications in this scene. Shaw lost her parents at a tragically young age, an age when your parents are perfect. They are practically gods. But when you grow up, and providing they're still alive, you realize your parents are flawed human beings. Mortal after all. She never had the opportunity for her relationship with her parents to evolve. She would never see them as equal to herself. They'll always be deified in her mind in a way she's probably not consciously aware of. The closest she can potentially get is her current sense of devastation and disappointment in realizing what her creators are really like. A feeling David has known since activation. So she can relate to him, just not on a literal one-to-one scale. Before all hell broke loose, we never really got a good sense of how Shaw felt about David. Holloway was antagonistic from the start. Shaw seemed more receptive. She smiled when he sassed Charlie. That's why they call it a thesis, Doctor. And she was grateful when David rescued them from the storm. But that's the extent of it. She seems okay with synthetics being used as slaves, in quotation marks, and yet this scene perhaps gives question to that. She asks, "What happens when Wayland's not around to program you anymore?" And she asks him if he wants freedom. But why is she asking this? Why does she care? My personal reading is that she's trying to determine how much of his behavior has been determined by Wayland, how much is really David's own choice. Maybe she does want to give him the benefit of the doubt, or maybe she's just trying to figure him out. This is the first time she's had a proper conversation with him where she asks him about himself. We get slightly more insight into the scene in the Paradise script. Arguably, this was the point of the scene, but they cut it out. "Shaw, do you know how Dr. Holloway got infected, David?" Ah, she senses it. David, however, just shrugs. David, "Curiosity, I suppose." Shaw, "Excuse me?" David, "Your creator told his children not to eat from the tree of knowledge, but he knew they couldn't possibly resist. After all, he's the one who made them that way." Then, for pity, "Dr. Holloway's death is a tragedy, but whatever led to it, it was simply a byproduct of his programming." On Shaw, "Who does this little shit think he is?" Shaw, "We're not programmed." David just smiles. Then, "Of course you're not." Shaw shakes her head, looks across the room at Wayland, old and feeble as his men lift him from his wheelchair. "What happens when Wayland's not around to program you anymore?" "I suppose I'd be free." At a long last, Shaw is finally starting to understand exactly what makes David tick. Realizes, "You want him to die." Want. It's not a concept I'm familiar with. That being said, everyone hates their parents. Shaw, "I didn't." This scene has clear goals and intentions, whereas the scene we get in the film is just a character moment, really. It's defining the tension without revealing much information. They change the question from, "You want him to die," to, "You want to be free." It totally changes the meaning. Instead of accusation, it shows some kind of interest in what David will do when Wayland is gone. Sure, you can subtextually gather those concepts are kind of interlinked within cells interlinked, but I am leaning towards the script version. I think it's clear, it has a point, and I'm glad Shaw isn't a dummy. She put it together. David killed Holloway. Going forward, that just adds more tension for the bridge into Covenant. I am annoyed that the early scripts have all this really on-the-nose biblical stuff. I mentioned before, you know, that everyone seems to be able to memorize and quote biblical passages flawlessly, and it's just, no one talks like that. I mean, David possibly could, but it's far too overt in its themes. Seeing David with Wayland is interesting. In the next scene, in the pyramid, when he tells Wayland it's safe to remove his helmet, he's speaking in an especially restrained, robotic way. Shaw is hesitant to remove her helmet. She says, "We still don't know how Holloway got infected, if it's in the air." So she actually doesn't suspect David at all. Were these changes made so that the relationship was more ambiguous? That there could still potentially be a relationship between them? It's like they decided to pull back on the conflict, maybe to make room for whatever they initially envisioned for Covenant. And yes, I'm with everyone else that the story would have been very interesting and very worth 2 hours of our time. All she seems to suspect is that David, or rather Wayland, wanted to preserve the Trilobite. Speaking of the Trilobite, did you ever think it was weird that no one ever discusses the Trilobite? Well, initially, they did. I somehow totally forgot there was an alternate version of the scene between Vickers and Wayland. I apologize for that oversight in the last episode, but I'm here to correct that. Weirdly, I had no memory of this deleted scene until friend of the show, Michael Giammarino, called my attention to it. I must have seen it. I went right through that Blu-ray as thoroughly as possible. Granted, there was a lot on there. It might be one of the last movies that had such extensive behind-the-scenes coverage. And that's a shame. Nothing will ever really compare to the Lord of the Rings DVD special features. For 3 years, it was like following a reality TV show about a group of friends making a movie. We got to know the inside jokes and pranks, and the behind-the-scenes became as much a part of the experience as the films themselves. Meanwhile, Alien Covenant's Blu-ray release felt like an afterthought. There are a lot of think pieces on whether or not physical media is dead, but let's face it, they're still being made, and evidently they still turn a profit. Why not add a lot more bonus content to make the profits bigger? Even I might be tempted to buy a physical copy of a movie again if it promised to deliver as much bonus content as Prometheus did. Alien Covenant was the last Blu-ray I bought, and I was pretty disappointed, and mere months later I got rid of my entire DVD collection and never looked back. I don't miss carting all of that from house to house. I mean, I move on an almost annual basis. I don't collect many books or action figures for that reason either. I like that moving house for me takes about 4 or 5 hours and I'm usually completely unpacked the same day. I'm a minimalist, but I can also appreciate the maximalist way of life. The trick is, earn very little yourself, make friends with people who collect cool stuff. Anyway, I've gone and ruined a perfectly good segue. My point is, there was an alternate take of the scene between Vickers and Wayland, and this absolutely needed to be in the film. If I did see this when I first got the Blu-ray, it somehow left no impression on me, probably because I didn't fully comprehend just how flawed the final version is. I'll play this conversation in its entirety for you.
So you came after all?
I thought you wanted me to come.
I did. After all your vigorous attempts to stop me from coming here, I'm just surprised to see you. If my memory serves, last time we spoke, you said I was nothing but a stupid old fool, chasing fairy tales.
I shouldn't have said that. I am sorry.
Well, consider yourself forgiven. What do you want?
I want to say goodbye.
I'm sorry?
If you're really going down there, you're going to die.
Very negative way of looking at things.
Maybe you should look at the thing squealing next door and tell me how positive you feel.
You know, Mary, I've always despised that sarcastic attitude of yours. Exactly why you should have stayed at home.
Did you really think I was going to sit in a boardroom for years arguing over who was in charge while you go look for some miracle and some godforsaken rock in the middle of space? Did you? A king has his reign, and then he dies. It's inevitable. That is a natural order of things. You used to have so much grace. I respected you. Look up to you. You're nothing but a scared old man. And I'm tired of waiting for that last pitiful breath to leave your godforsaken mouth.
Anything else?
No. Father. That's it.
I put the blame squarely on Ridley here, chopping out essential information and totally changing the context from something meaningful to something meaningless. I don't blame the actors because this seems like the kind of production that they improvised and experimented with a bit. And actors, as Luke pointed out in a previous episode, do not approach the project the same way the audience does. It's more about how they will deliver the scene, how they will move and talk, how they will work themselves up into the right emotion, And if you're doing multiple takes, as an actor, you don't know which one is ending up in the film. So I think as much as Charlize Theron was invested in this role and this character, and she clearly put a lot of thought into it, when you are doing multiple takes like that, she's not going to stand back and go, well, hang on, does that really make sense? I don't think she was probably aware of how it was going to be used. In this scene, Vickers is more nuanced, apologetic, concerned. We learn she did revere Waylon at some point, but can't stand to see the frail old man he has become. Vickers references the trilobite, and we understand how she and Waylon feel about it. I also like the simple added touch of learning that Waylon calls Vickers Mary as a nickname. It shows familiarity and history, it fleshes out their relationship. This is fantastic! It's a damn shame all of Meredith's character development is relegated to DVD extras. She's a compelling character played by a compelling actress, and I would argue they are pivotal plot scenes too. It's important and fascinating to see that this woman isn't just angry, there's a nuance there. She cares about her father on some level, but feels he's holding on to life beyond reason. Part of it is wanting to take his place, of course, but that doesn't seem to be the full picture. It's great, it's ambiguous, and yet it gives us a lot to play with. As you heard in the last minute, watching the version they used, I was just saying, what? After every line with increasing confusion? This phenomenon isn't uncommon in writing. It's easy after so many rewrites to become too familiar with the material. You start taking all the subtext for granted, so you chop things away without realizing you're losing integral information for the audience. I'm surprised they had the presence of mind to remember to include Vickers calling Waylon father, to be honest. I see this as a huge mistake, perhaps the only major one Prometheus makes in my eyes. It's funny, over the course of analyzing this film, I found mistakes no one ever talks about that, to me, are more egregious than the more famous ones. You know, I don't care about the vagina snakes or running in a straight line from a falling ship. Those aren't problems. Deleting essential dialogue and character development, that's a bigger problem for me. Returning to the minute, it's funny that Waylon just says the air smells fine to him, as if, I don't know, carbon monoxide or most air toxins have a distinct odor. He seems to trust David completely, and sure enough, he has been a loyal servant all these years. Clearly, the programming defining his behavior around Waylon is airtight. Looking at Ford in this minute, I realize it's a shame we never really got to know her. As I've mentioned before, I'm always fascinated by how big ensembles are balanced in a story. And Prometheus doesn't exactly do a good job with that, despite this franchise being known for it. I mean, the original Alien has a very distinct and memorable cast of characters. Why have we lost that here, Ridley? Chance, Revel, and Ford, especially, are just glorified extras, but it really doesn't take much screen time to make us care about a character. It may be just even a line or two during the breakfast scene. Aliens has a much bigger cast, and I remember them all very well. We have 10 primary characters: Ripley, Newt, Hicks, Burke, Bishop, Hudson, Gorman, Vasquez, Apone, and Drake. And you probably remember all those guys by name. Frost, Pharaoh, and the rest, there's at least something distinct or memorable about them, even if they're just on screen for a few seconds. Let's compare that to Prometheus. For the significant players, we have Shaw, Holloway, David, Vickers, Yannick, Fifield, and Milburn. 7, the same number as the Nostromo crew. So I think they should have either minimized the crew or just given us a bit more of the minor players. I'm fine with all those background security and engineering guys being faceless and nameless, but you introduced us to Chance, Ravel, and Ford quite specifically. Do something with them. They're all strong actors, give them something to do, otherwise what's the point? And even when you look in the behind the scenes, they really put a lot of effort into their costume design and making them look unique and stand out from the crowd. Well, why do that if you're not doing anything with those characters? The closest equivalent I can think of how it should be done is, of course, my favorite, Star Trek. Well, aside from the original series, the bridge crew are all fleshed out. Everyone else is an extra, essentially, but every now and then, even they get a moment to shine here and there. And sure, movies are a very different medium, especially if you're only making one movie, but well, look at The Lord of the Rings, or even The Hobbit. The Hobbit's got a lot of problems, but I think that first movie does a very good job of making every single one of those dwarves memorable and giving us a kind of a sense of who they are and what they're about. Even though I haven't seen the Hobbit movies in a long time, I think I only ever saw them once, just from memory I go, oh yeah, I feel more of a connection to those dwarves than Chance and Revel and Ford, because they don't really do anything. I mean, this movie's editing is so fast-paced that we're even cutting out essential dialogue for the major players in this story, so I guess I shouldn't be surprised. But honestly, there had to have been room somewhere to give these minor players a few more lines, just a few more moments here and there, or just incorporate them into the plot more. And there is an example on the script, which we will get to in a moment. As I watch Ford, and when I see her injured or perhaps killed by the engineer, I realize I know absolutely nothing about her. What did she make of this whole situation? Last we saw she was being attacked by Elizabeth when she tried to put her in cryo. A lot of weird things have gone down in a short space of time. Is she just here for the money? Does she care about any of this? Does she question it at all? Is she just following orders? At least we know where Chance and Ravel stand to a degree, especially in the finale and how they had to go down with the ship. I can't claim to be a writer, but I do enjoy writing as a hobby. And I never have more characters than I need. They all serve a function, however small. So things like this, I just sort of puzzle over, going, well, why did you write these characters into the script? You invented this whole person, and for what? The minute ends on David looking way too excited about the cargo hold. What are you planning on using that cargo for, David? Is he already making plans? I mean, at this point, I suppose he's team engineer, so he's probably like, yeah, let's kill the humans. Let's go to Earth, bomb them all. And now, the scripts. In Paradise, events are arranged differently. As I read in an earlier minute, Shaw wakes up after the trilobite is removed. Weyland is kinder to her than he is in the film, and we cut straight to the crew on their way to the engineer. Vickers is not Weyland's daughter until the later scripts. I never read from Lindelof's Prometheus script before, because there's practically no difference. It's just useful as confirmation that certain ideas were planned and not improvised. It will feature more in later episodes, but for now, I will say that the Prometheus script includes changes like David telling Vickers, "Your father says, try harder." And Shaw escapes from Ford and the other guy, apparently named Leon, and they have this exchange. Ford, where did she go? We don't have time for this. We've got bigger problems with the old man. Old man? What are you talking about? Come on, this way. Leave her. We'll get her later. One little moment like this gives us more character for Ford. We see she doesn't know anything about the situation. It humanizes her and shows she's not one of the bad guys per se. She's swept up in this situation as much as anyone else. The scene between Weyland and Meredith in the script is exactly the same as the one in the deleted scene. And this is the only significant character moment for Vickers in any of the scripts, really. Weirdly, in this script, after this minute we're covering, is when Fifield shows up. That makes no sense to me, and clearly they realized that and removed it. That's a weird spot to put that rise in tension, because I think we were already heading towards the engineer. There's already the big finale on its way, so throwing Fifield in at the last minute just seems really unbalanced, so Zombie Fifield's a difficult one because we've already sort of had a similar scene with Holloway, and then, yeah, they go off to see the engineer. So where do you put that? I think where they put it is the right place, because you're slowly mounting the tension upwards. It's not like you have some big shock like Holloway, and then nothing, nothing, nothing. Then you go to see the engineer. It's slowly ramping up the tension in a consistent way. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson signing off. You can find me on TravianDesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook. If you would like to become a Patreon supporter, find me on patreon.com/TravianDesigns. I would like to thank my current patrons, Mark Boda, Tariq, and William Elkhart.